The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
I have a friend. He loves going to auctions, and he's always on his phone, but he's not on social media. He's on auction sites like Gumtree and eBay. And one time he went to an auction, and they were auctioning off outboard engines. They brought out one engine, but no one bidded. So my friend put in a really, really low bid, and he won. And they brought out another engine, but no one bidded. And so my friend put in a really low bid, and he won. And this happened 10 times. 10 times they brought out an engine, but 10 times no one bidded. 10 times my friend put in a really low bid. 10 times my friend won it. Because where people didn't see value in this, my friend knew there was value. Each one was worth $10,000, and he sold them on eBay for $100,000. He made in one day $100,000, which is more than I make in one year with City Bible Forum, because he saw value where everyone else had missed value. Well, what if it's the same with Jesus? What if we're missing something in Jesus? Now, I reckon if Jesus was around today, this is what he would look like. He'll be a short, nondescript, tanned, Middle Eastern male walking around the countryside of Palestine speaking Aramaic and Hebrew. This isn't really Jesus. I got the picture off the internet. But I'm waiting for the day someone turns up and says, "Hey, that's me." And I say, "Wow, Jesus is here. He really did come back." But as you know, right now, Christianity is exploding all over the world. Millions of people in Africa, in Asia, and in South America are choosing to trust, love, follow, and worship Jesus. So maybe they're seeing a value in Jesus that we in the West are missing. So it's time that we in the West took a quick time out and just stopped and forget about the Jesus we think we know. Forget about the Jesus we think we've heard of. Forget about the Jesus we might have grown up with. And let's rediscover the Jesus of the Bible. So that's what we're going to do today and in the next few weeks that I come to speak. We're going to look at one aspect of Jesus in the Bible. And today we're looking at the title, the topic that, did you know Jesus in the Bible was accused of partying too hard? And this talk will come in the form of a 20-minute talk, followed by question and answer time. There'll be three parts to the talk. In the first part, we'll look at Jesus in the Bible. Middle part of the talk, we'll look at problems that we might have with Jesus in the Bible. And the final part of the talk, well, how might Jesus in the Bible want us to respond to him? So let's begin with the first part of the talk. Jesus in the Bible. Now, in the Bible, Jesus was always around food and drink. These days, when we go to a restaurant or cafe and the food comes out, we don't eat the food. We take our phones out and we take pictures of the food. The food's getting cold, but we got to get our pictures of the food. And there's always that guy who's taking photos and uploading them onto social media. Photos of the latest hipster burger, smashed avocado sandwich, microbrew. Well, if Jesus was around today, he would be that guy, because he was always around food and drink. He's always at restaurants and cafes. Look at how Jesus comes to us in the Bible. And this is coming from Matthew 11 and also Luke 7. And it says this, "The Son of Man came." And this is Jesus talking about himself. He liked to call himself the Son of Man. So he's saying, "I came. The Son of Man came. I came eating and drinking. And you say, here is a glutton and a drunkard. You drink too much and you eat too much." That was the criticism. Now, there's no evidence in the Bible that Jesus did too much overeating, that he got drunk. But, you know, he was doing a lot of eating, a lot of drinking for this criticism to stick. And yes, the Bible shows that Jesus had a lot of self-control, restraint, he fasted. But there are other parts of the Bible that show that Jesus was doing a lot of eating and drinking. And he wasn't just at restaurants and cafes, he was at weddings, banquets, parties, and feasts. So in the book of Luke, very early on, at the start, in chapter 5, it says this, "Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. And this wee theme that Luke sets up here and continues all the way through the book of Luke, that Jesus is often at banquets, parties, weddings and feasts where there's food and drinking, singing, dancing, fun and laughter. And John, right at the start in chapter 2, he sets up his picture of Jesus with this, with a famous story of the wedding banquet. And many of us will know this story, that at this wedding banquet, they run out of wine. And they run out of wine because the guests had had enough to drink. Now, in the original Greek, it says the guests were drunk. Now, think about it. The guests were drunk. Weddings in those days went for days. And so guests have been drinking for days and days and days. And now they've run out of wine because, really, the guests have had enough to drink. Drunk in the original Greek. If you and I there would have said, okay, guys, take it easy now. Hit the water, have the orange juice, you've had enough to drink. Jesus comes around and he gives them more wine. If Jesus was here today, he would fail his RSA, his responsible server alcohol license. It would be revoked. Jesus, what are you doing? He gives these people more wine, not just more wine, but more good wine. Not just more good wine, but lots of more good wine. 12 jars of wine, 100 liters each. So 1,200 jars of good wine. Why would Jesus do this? Why would he give so much wine to people who have already had enough? Because in the Bible, food and drink, singing and dancing, fun and laughter are an image of what life with Jesus will be like, both now and the life to come. And just as food and drink satisfy our longings and desires, Jesus satisfies our deepest longings and desires. Now, the Chinese know how to do good food. I remember as a little Chinese boy going to my first 10-course Chinese banquet. My parents warned me, now you know at this banquet, it's a banquet. There'll be 10 courses, so you got to pace yourself. But I remember when the first course came out, I was a little boy, I thought, whoa, how good is this? And then a second course comes out, I think, whoa, how good is this? A third course comes out, I think, wow, how good is this? And then fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, nine, 10 courses. I could not eat. I had to stop at 4 courses. It was too much food. Because for the Chinese, there has to be too much food. There's meant to be too much food. You're meant to have food left over. There's meant to be abundance. That's how you do a party. I remember going to my first Caucasian dinner as a little Chinese boy, and they give you a little bit of meat and 2 vegetables. And you're thinking, this is it? This is dinner? Like, you think, where are the cameras? This is a joke. Someone's playing a joke on me. And in the Caucasian custom, you're meant to finish your plate, polish it clean, and that's good manners, and it stops. They don't give you more food. In any other culture, if you finish your plate, they've got to bring out more food. And that's a point of the banquet. There's meant to be too much food. There's meant to be food left over. And the Chinese can eat anything. If it flies, we will eat it. If it walks, we will eat it. If it swims, we will eat it. I call it the scorched earth policy. Air, land and sea, we can eat it. My Caucasian friends aren't so brave. I have Caucasian friends who can't eat a prawn because it's got eyes. It's still looking at me. I can't eat anything with eyes. Whereas in the Asian custom, we put the head there so we have the eyes looking at us while we eat it. So us Asians, we can eat anything. But I've found my Caucasian friends, they can drink anything. If it grows, they can drink it. So grain, they can get beer. Grapes, they can get wine. Apples, they can get cider. They can drink anything. Jesus doesn't discriminate. In the Bible, he eats and he drinks. Singing, dancing, fun and laughter. Why? Because it's an image of what life will be like with Jesus both now and the life to come. And just as food and drink satisfy our deep desires and longings, Jesus satisfies our deepest desires and longings. So that's Jesus in the Bible. Let's come to the middle part of the talk now. What are some mistakes we can make about Jesus? Well, the first mistake we can make is this. It's the fear of missing out. This fear that if I follow Jesus, I will somehow miss out. But the great irony of the fear of missing out, FOMO, is by fearing missing out, we will miss out. We know what it's like every New Year's Eve where people invite us to a party and say, they say, do you want to come to this party? You go, oh, I don't know. I'm just waiting. I'm seeing. Then there's another party. Do you want to come to this one? Oh, I'm not sure yet. Because we're hedging our bets. We don't want to commit in case a better party comes out. And in the end, we miss out. I still remember one New Year's Eve, my wife and I spent it in Croydon Park in the burbs looking at the fireworks in Sydney going pff, 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 in the distance because we had not committed to any party, so we ended up at no party. The fear of missing out means you do miss out. And maybe we do the same with Jesus, like, oh, I don't want to follow Jesus. I'm still young. I want to travel. I want to make friends. But this is Jesus. Food and drink, singing and dancing, fun and laughter. It's the opposite. By not following Jesus, we will miss out. And by not following Jesus, if we try and enjoy this without Jesus, on Jesus' terms, we will destroy the things we love or they will end up destroying us. So that's the first mistake we can make. This fear of missing out. If I follow Jesus, I will somehow miss out in this life. No, it's the opposite. By not following Jesus, we will miss out in this life and the life to come. But the second mistake we can make with Jesus, and here I think this is what well-meaning Christians might do, is this, that somehow I need to be boring, dull, and serious to follow Jesus, out of respect for Jesus. And we need all these human regulations and rules out of respect for Jesus. But that would disrespect Jesus. See, this is my youngest child. His name is Jonty, and this is Jonty normally, always happy, always smiling. You give Jonty an ice cream, and this is what he's like. This picture was taken early in the year. But early in the year, we also needed to get Jonty a passport. And we told him, now, for the passport photo, you're not allowed to smile, not allowed to laugh, you can't smile for the photo, so you got to be as serious as you can be. So this ended up being his photo. And we thought, whoa, that just totally does him no respect, because this is the real Jonty, and this is passport Jonty. Real Jonty, passport Jonty. And maybe we do the same with Jesus, that out of respect for Jesus, we need to be serious, dull and boring, have rules and regulations, but that would disrespect Jesus, because this is a picture of Jesus in the Bible. Food and drink, singing and dancing, fun and laughter. This is the real Jesus. That would disrespect him. And if we come up with rules and regulations, that would disrespect him, because he came to set us free from rules and regulations. So that's a second mistake we can make with Jesus. But there's a third mistake we can make with Jesus, and it's this. You know what? I would take the good things that Jesus gives, but I don't need Jesus. I can enjoy them without Jesus. Why do I need Jesus to enjoy the good things in this life? I'm very happy for you that you found Jesus, but he's not for me. You know, in the end, I've just got to be true to myself, chase my dreams, do whatever it takes to make me happy. I'm glad you found Jesus. You do you, but I do me. I don't need Jesus. Well, what's the problem with this? Well, this too is very disrespectful to Jesus. Now, those of you who own dogs, you will know what it's like. You come home from the butcher, you have a treat, you have a gift for your dog, a fresh, juicy steak, and when you give to your dog, what does your dog do? It runs away and it buries it. And you think, oh, stab me in the heart. How disrespectful is that? And there's a breakdown, a violation of trust at that moment, because your dog is thinking, I can't trust you. And it takes it and it runs away from you. It has that little look in the corner of its eye like, I don't want you to see me doing this because I'm going to hide it from you. You think, I gave it to you. I'm not going to take it from you. I want you to enjoy it in my presence. And so for the dog to say, I don't want you around, it's like us, it's a breakdown of trust. It's disrespectful. And when we say, you know what, I'll take the good things that Jesus gives me, but I won't have Jesus, well, it's very disrespectful, dishonoring to Jesus. And it's a breakdown in trust as well. But there's a deeper problem than that. And it's a problem that we're all going to face with Western individualism. Western individualism is this very unique position that we find ourselves in, and it's this. Western individualism can be summed up in these words. In the end, I have to be true to myself. I have to do whatever it takes to make me happy. I have to ignore, I have to reject all other forms of authority, because in the end, they're just arbitrary, social, religious constructs imposed upon me. I have to keep it real. I have to be brave. I have to be the lone moral hero. And I have to do whatever it takes to make me happy. And in other words, it's freedom without commitment or responsibility. And we're so used to this, we think, well, what's wrong with that? Freedom with no commitment and no responsibility. Well, the problem with Western individualism is taken to its logical extreme, it ends up with isolation and loneliness. So as we keep chasing the perfect party, the perfect party, the perfect party, we actually find ourselves alone, isolated and lonely. Sebastian Junger has his book that's just come out called Tribe. And he says Western individualism, as good as it sounds, freedom with no commitment, no responsibility, it ends up in its logical extreme, isolation and loneliness, because we have no tribe, no love, no belonging. And that's why we in the West right now have higher rates of anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder compared with other non-Western cultures. I came across this on a website, Vice, Why Swedes Are So Lonely. I spoke to the director of the Swedish Theory of Love about why we Swedes are so lonely, independent, strong and sad. Sweden, Scandinavia, it is the pinnacle of Western individualism. Independently wealthy with a great healthcare system. Again, freedom, no responsibility, no commitment. And we think, what is wrong with that? Independence and a great healthcare system. Well, it means you end up aging and dying alone. That's the problem. It's not only just disrespectful to the God who loves us and makes us, but we'll end up isolated and alone. So how does Jesus want us to respond? This is the final part of the talk. He wants us to do this. He wants us to enjoy the good things that he's given us, but in his company. Enjoy the gift and share the moment with the giver. So it all comes down to this. How do we enjoy a gift? So I once heard this joke, so it's fictitious, it's not real, but it's about a barber in a village. And one day a baker comes to get a haircut, and it's a great haircut. And the baker says to the barber, how much do I owe you? And the barber says, you know what, it's free. Take it as a gift. Enjoy. And the baker says, no, I got to pay something. And the barber says, it's free. Take it as a gift. Enjoy. And the baker goes, wow, thank you very much. And so the next day when the barber turns up, there are 100 loaves of bread lined up outside the front of his shop as a thank you present. Later that day, a florist comes to get his haircut. It's a great haircut. At the end, he says, thank you. How much do I owe you? And the barber says, you know what? It's free. Take it as a gift. Enjoy. And the florist goes, nah, I got to pay you something. And the barber says, you know what? It's free. Take it as a gift. Enjoy. And the florist goes, whoa, thank you very much. And so the next day when the barber turns up, he sees 100 roses lined up out the front of his shop to say thank you. Later that day, a Chinese person turns up to get his hair cut. And it's a great haircut. And at the end, the Chinese person says, wow, thank you very much. How much do I owe you? And the barber says, you know what? It's free. Take it as a gift. Enjoy. And the Chinese person says, nah, I got to pay you something. And the barber says, nah, it's free. Take it as a gift. Enjoy. And the Chinese person says, wow, thank you very much. So the next day when the barber turns up, he finds 100 Chinese people lined up out the front of his shop. So it all comes down to this. What do we do with a good gift? Well, Jesus says, enjoy it. Take it as a gift. And it's to be enjoyed in his presence, the gift and the giver. See, again, there are two mistakes we can make. As Christians, we can make this mistake. You know what? I'm spiritual. I'm holy. I don't need these good physical gifts from God to enjoy. But God says, no, take it as a gift. Enjoy the food, the drink, the singing, the dancing, the fun, the laughter, because they're an image of what life will be like with me both now and the life to come. But the opposite mistake would say, you know what? I can enjoy this, but I don't need Jesus in my life to enjoy them. But you got to see how, again, disrespectful, dishonoring this is to the giver. It's a breakdown in trust. But more than that, these things are to be enjoyed in his presence. And then Jesus isn't just the Son of God who loves us, who made us, who gave us good things to enjoy. He's the God who saves us. He came to die for us, to save us, so we could enjoy the presence of God and to enjoy these good gifts in the presence of God. This is Sophie Scott. She's a neuroscientist, and this is her giving her TED talk. And she talks about the science of laughter, and she studies, well, why do we laugh? And she's found that we are 20 times more likely to laugh at something if we're in the presence of someone we know and trust. So in the end, it's not what we do, it's not what we own, it's not what we eat that makes life enjoyable. It's who we share the moment with. And as we go from party to party, we're actually not looking for the right food, the right music, the right dancing. We're actually looking for the right people to share that moment with. And it's the same with Jesus. In the end, it's actually more than about food and drink, singing and dancing, fun and laughter. It's who we're sharing this life with. And in the end, this means so much to Jesus. He comes not just to love us, not just to give us good gifts, but to die for us and to save us so that we can enjoy these things as a shared moment with God. Jesus tells a very famous story, and I'm sure many of you know it. It's about a wedding banquet. And Jesus talks about a rich man who throws a banquet. And I think the rich man represents either Jesus or God. And the invitations go out, and then people make soft excuses. Oh, I can't come. I got married. I bought some cows. I bought some property. And they're soft excuses. Or maybe they're real excuses. Maybe they really can't come. But they miss out on the banquet. And it's the same with Jesus. Maybe we got soft excuses. Maybe we got real excuses for why we can't know, love, trust, worship, and follow Jesus. But in the end, if we don't do this, we will miss out. We miss out on Jesus, who fulfills our deepest desires and longings. Jesus came eating and drinking, singing and dancing, fun and laughter. Why? Because this would be an image of what life with Jesus would be both now and the life to come. And just as food and drink satisfy our deep desires and longings, Jesus comes to satisfy our deepest desires and longings.
So is it good to be a glutton and a drunkard?
Is it good to be a glutton and drunkard? Everything in life is that wisdom, sweet spot, Goldilocks spot. Not too much, not too little, just right. And the dynamic I explain is these are good gifts from a good God to enjoy. Don't make less of them than what they are. They're a good gift. Enjoy them. And I often give the example of my wife and I when we were PhD students in America. People give us a $50, $100 gift voucher to use at a restaurant. And we'd order a steak and the chips. And usually about halfway in, both she and I would feel guilty, like, should we do this? Can we do this? Ought we do this? We're meant to be poor PhD students training for Christian ministry. Can we all enjoy a steak in America? And then after a while, we thought, well, no, this person has given us a gift to enjoy. It's a gift voucher. Enjoy it. Take it for what it is. Don't make less of it than what it is. Enjoy it. Enjoy it in the spirit that it's been given. And so enjoy it in that way, but then don't make too much of it than what it is. Don't make it represent anything more than a steak and chips. Don't make it your freedom, your identity, your purpose, your calling, your belonging, your love, your validation, your status, your security, because you'll destroy that steak if you ask too much of it, and it will destroy you. Yeah, so several things. It's interesting, Christians have struggled in this area for like how, what's too little, what's too much, where's that Goldilocks sweet spot? And it's fascinating that the primary images of the kingdom of God, the primary images of what life will be like with Jesus, both now and the life to come, have been food and drink, sex and marriage. They're your primary figures. And Christians have always gone, whoa, like, we don't know what to do with that. So on the one hand, we've practiced what's called asceticism. Like, okay, that's for normal people. But for Christians, we have a higher calling. We're holy, we're spiritual. So we don't need and we shouldn't have those things. But we're discovering more and more a corrective. Now, we're physical, and these are good gifts from a good God to enjoy, but don't make more of them. And maybe there's a caution there, but we still need to have that sweet spot just in the middle. And we have to understand what philosophers and psychologists call the double power paradox. Whatever has the power to do much good actually has the equal power to do much harm. So we see that with fire, much good, but much harm. We see that with the invention of the wheel, much good, but, you know, young boys and fast machines, much harm. We see that with sex and marriage, you know, God's primary image of life with Jesus in the kingdom, much good, but there's so much harm with sex and marriage. Like, my parents run marriage counseling for Christian couples, and they will often say, you know, 9 out of 10 marriages are profoundly broken and unhappy. So there's a lot of harm that happens in sex and marriage. And we see that with food and alcohol as well, power to do much good, and also the power to do much harm. So not just with alcohol and addiction, but also with, you know, diabetes and other food-related issues. So it's having that wisdom to understand this is a good gift, enjoy it for what it is, but don't make more of it than what it is. Don't make it an idol, don't make it an addiction. And maybe that's where mature Christian leaders can demonstrate, you know, leadership in this area as a positive example of how to enjoy good gifts from a good God.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.